utterly to the left. Well, thank you. Right. So how can Austro-libertarians reach the left? Well, it depends which left. There's some left-wingers I call the aristocratic left, and I despair of reaching them. These are left-wingers who have a particular vision of an idyllic society and that are prepared to hammer into place anyone whose preferences or behavior doesn't align with the vision. In effect, they see other people as their property. Back when I lived in North Carolina, on the city line between Chapel Hill and Carrboro, I used to watch with mixed amusement and horror as the affluent white liberals who ran the city councils of those two communities competed to see which city could impose the most callous and intrusively micromanaging legislation. In Carrboro, which incredibly built itself as the Paris of the Piedmont, yeah, it's just this little town, the council thought that old cars looked unsightly and so declared that residents would be forbidden to park in their driveways any car older than a certain number of years. I forget the exact number. Unsurprisingly, this law had a more burdensome impact on lower-income households than on higher ones. So much for the idea that these liberals were supposed to be caring about the poor. This is I'm supposed to get closer to somebody named Mike. Is Mike in the room? The Chapel Hill Council, with similar solicitude, forbade a local copy shop to list their low prices or to use the word discount in their advertising because its emphasis on low cost seemed tawdry and inconsistent with their vision of an upscale community. I'm not making this up. I have to laugh when conservatives accuse liberals of practicing class warfare, because these regulations were class warfare, all right, but just not in the direction that we're supposed to be thinking of. The Carrboro Council thought that cul-de-sacs looked unfriendly and not only wanted to ban new ones, but it wanted to ram streets through existing cul-de-sacs and sort of open up these little private fiefdoms to the wider community. So, the liberal mantra about, caring about the children and children's safety only seems to apply sometimes. I don't think that one actually passed. The same council wanted to require drive-in banks and drive-in restaurants to have a downward slope as you drive through the driveway so that once you're done transacting your business at the drive-in window, you can drive down without turning your engine on, and thus you can slide noiselessly and emissionlessly down onto the street. I'm still not making this stuff up. What sorts of gun laws these two hyperactive councils favored, I'll leave to your imagination. Okay, so I don't know how to sell Austro-libertarianism to those guys. They seem like enemies of the human race. I mean, it's not as though a free market couldn't address some of their concerns. I mean, they could form private communities and impose all these rules if they wanted. But the mentality of privilege and entitlement that these guys seem to have, I think, wouldn't welcome the market discipline of actually having to pay the costs of these policies rather than externalizing them onto their unconsenting neighbors. But that's not the whole story on the left. There are many, many left-wingers whose primary motivation is in some ways a very libertarian impulse to protect people they see as being pushed around. So these left-wingers look at contemporary society. They see an economy dominated by mammoth impersonal corporations with enormous and seemingly unaccountable power. They see lower and middle-income people disempowered in the workplace, struggling to make ends meet. They see institutions and social practices rigged against blacks, women, gays, immigrants, other oppressed groups. And they turn to government to address these inequities, because they see the democratic state as an institution that's in principle accountable to the public, whereas they see these private power as something that's not accountable to the public. And so we need to turn to this publicly accountable institution, the democratic state, to protect us against private power. So let's call this variety of left-wingers the anti-privilege left. Now, of course, there's overlap between these two groups. There are people who have strands of both the aristocratic left and the anti-privilege left in their thinking, and so to the extent that you get one strand or another, your mileage may vary in terms of talking with them. But I think that in large part, the anti-privileged left is the left we can reach. They're already largely on our side on a number of issues, civil liberties issues, mostly, not guns, alas, but other civil liberty issues by and large. They're mostly anti-war. I mean, there are a bunch of leftists out there who didn't change their minds about civil liberties and war once we switched from Republicans and Democrats in the administration. You know, they aren't the ones who get on TV all the time, but you talk to them, there are plenty of them who are very unhappy with what the current Democratic administration is doing. Their chief sticking points are economic. So what we need to do is to show them that a free market can actually achieve the goals, or a lot of the goals anyway, that they're concerned about, and that thanks to public choice problems on the one hand and what Mises called the economic democracy of the market on the other, it's actually market institutions that are more publicly accountable and democratic states that are less so. I think we can do a better job of reaching the anti-privileged left than we've been doing. I think we've been making a less persuasive case to them than we could, because I think we ourselves have actually been underestimating the extent to which a free market would address their concerns. And I think that's also because, to a large extent, we have underestimated the extent to which features of present-day society that the left-wingers think are the results of markets are actually the results of state intervention. So I think to some extent we've bought a little bit too much into the left's conception of what's caused by free markets. That wasn't always the case. In the 19th century, libertarians weren't just aligned with, but often thought of themselves as part of, in effect, the anti-privileged left. Radical free marketers were in the forefront of the labor movement, the feminist movement, the anti-slavery movement, and more broadly, movement for racial equality, in favor of sexual deregulation of various kinds. In the 20th century, libertarians felt largely drawn into an alliance with conservatives. And that's because state socialism was, seemed on a triumphant upward march everywhere. And libertarians and conservatives agreed in being against that. And so they allied with each other. And I think that although the alliance didn't really last, I think a lot of things rubbed off on each side. What conservatives got from libertarians is they picked up a lot of our free market rhetoric, which they then used to festoon their anti-free market policies. But I think that to some extent we picked up from them an excessively rosy picture of the economic status quo, and thus to some extent a knee-jerk aversion to a lot of the concerns of the anti-privileged left. Now in 1966, Murray Rothbard wrote the following, quote, "For some time I've come to the conclusion that the grave deficiency in the current output and thinking of our libertarians and classical liberals is an enormous blind spot when it comes to big business. There's a tendency to worship big business per se, and a corollary tendency to fail to realize that while big business would indeed merit praise if they won that bigness on the purely free market, in the contemporary world of total neo-mercantilism and what is essentially a neo-fascist corporate state, bigness is a priori highly suspect, because big business most likely got that way through an intricate and decisive network of subsidies, privileges, and direct and indirect grants of monopoly protection." End quote. Now, Rothbard's lament about the pro-big business orientation among libertarians is less applicable today than it was when Rothbard wrote it, and Rothbard's own efforts are largely to thank for that. But I believe there still is some tendency for us to underestimate the effects of this intricate and decisive network of subsidies, privileges, and monopoly grants. I like to use the term conflationism for the tendency to see the economic order that prevails in present-day industrialized societies as a close approximation to free market, rather than a more corporatist system of massive government intervention, largely on behalf of big business. Conflationism comes in both left-wing and right-wing varieties. In left conflationism, you look at all the undesirable features of the present-day economy that are actually features of corporatism, and you blame them on the free market, and you take that as a reason to reject the free market. The right-wing version is you take the existing economy to be a rough approximation to a free market, and then all the things in that economy that the left complains about, you think, well, those are the results of the free market, so they must be okay, and you reach to defend them. I think a good example is the recent debate in the U.S. over healthcare, which was billed not only by the Democrats but also by the Republicans as between something like a free market, the free market version of healthcare that we now supposedly have, versus a more, Republicans would call it socialist, the Democrats would call it something else, but basically a more government-oriented one. And so we're asked to think that we're being asked to decide between our current free market healthcare versus more of a socialized healthcare. But of course, we don't have a free market healthcare. We have a deeply corporatist system. So if you like the free market, then you're tricked into supporting the existing system, which is actually corporatist. If you don't like the existing system, then you're tricked into opposing the free market. And so either way, one wing or the other of the ruling class ends up winning. Now, the right-wing version of conflationism is a lot more common among conservatives than it is among libertarians. I think there's still a decent tinge of it within contemporary libertarianism. And it works against us because when we find ourselves sort of tricked by this way of thinking into supporting the economic status quo, then it just confirms the left-wing suspicion that free market language is just a cover for advancing the interests of big business. And so we lose any chance we have of reaching them. So whenever there's a corporation that's under attack by the left, Microsoft or Walmart or wherever it may be, we're often tempted to sort of rush to its defense because we think, they think that these things got their power in a purely free market and they're against the fairly free market and they're attacking these things. But of course, these corporations didn't get their power solely through free market means. And we often see things like, after all, in a free market, no one forces anybody to deal with this corporation. Well, that's true, but what free market are we talking about? The existing free market, where these companies are the beneficiaries of all sorts of regulations, it's not so clear that they really deserve our support. That's one reason that William Gillis has recommended using the term freed market instead of free market to sort of get ourselves past thinking of this as something we have and think of it more something to accomplish. As he puts it, moves us to the idea of after the revolution, the market being freed. Now, a lot of the claims I'm going to make are controversial among libertarians. They're defended by myself and my associates in the Alliance of the Libertarian Left, but other libertarians, such as my friend Walter Block, who's sitting right there grinding his teeth in despair at my confusions and heresies, think that a lot of what we have to say is horribly wrong. Walter has a couple of articles on why we're horribly wrong, and the number of other libertarians, Peter Klein, Brian Kaplan, and so on, who've written about why we're wrong. So you should read those. But you should also look at the Alliance of the Libertarian Left website and read what we've got to say and make up your own minds and then end up by agreeing with us. One of the central sort of left libertarian claims is that businesses would most likely be smaller, less hierarchical, and more numerous in a free market. Why is that? Well, it's because in addition to economies of scale, things that make it easier and more efficient to do things when you're bigger, there are also diseconomies of scale. Remember, the firms are like islands of central planning in an ocean of markets. As a firm grows larger, its internal transactions become increasingly dissociated from the price system, and inefficiency results. Information flow in large hierarchies is also notoriously inefficient. Moreover, even the economies of scale themselves generate diseconomies of scale. For example, suppose you've got your economy of scale makes your business more productive, so you produce more. Great. But now, in order to sell all the stuff you've produced, you have to distribute it over a wider geographical area. Because everyone within this radius has already bought your stuff, so you've got to expand it, which means your transportation costs go up. At some point in the firm's growth, the diseconomies start outweighing the economies, and that puts a limit to how big the firm can get, unless government intervention comes along and can help the firm by enabling it to privatize its profits and socialize or externalize its costs, and it can grow past the limit that would be efficient in a free market. There are lots of ways it does this: subsidies, eminent domain seizures, grants of monopoly privilege. All things are sort of direct help to these big businesses, but lots of indirect ways too. Government interventions in general, licensing, zoning regulations, taxes, fees, capitalization requirements, plus, of course, inflation, all these things are more burdensome to newer and smaller companies than to older and larger and more established ones. And so these work as a kind of semi-cartelization of big business. And that's the reason that all these regulations, which people often think of as being anti-big business, were actually historically lobbied for and in some cases even drafted by the companies. I mean, Rothbard was responsible for, or one of the ones responsible for, bringing into libertarianism a lot of the new left analysis of people like Gabriel Kolko, who didn't like their work being used to defend the free market, but, screw them. Another example is intellectual property laws, which libertarians are increasingly coming to recognize as not a legitimate form of property, but really a form of protectionism. Tool of government privilege, which is another way that established companies can make it harder to compete with them, because our ways of doing things, if we've gotten patents on them, then you can't do what we're doing without our suing you. Another example, transactions between firms are taxed. Transactions within firms aren't taxed so much, so that makes it cost-effective to move more and more functions inside, and that tends to encourage companies to get bigger more than they would in a free market. Having tax funding for highways and other kinds of transportation subsidies also helps large firms overcome those transportation problems associated with larger scale that I was mentioning. Think of the wear and tear that's done on highways by big trucks and shipping and so forth. Well, the most of the wear and tear on highways comes from long distance shipping, but those don't bear a proportionate burden of the tax. So actually, highways represent a redistributive tax from less affluent to the more affluent. So when left wingers complain that all these big hierarchical corporations with global reach dominating the economy and crowding out smaller and more local production, the thing they're complaining about is actually a situation in large part created by the government. And so our reaction should be to explain that to them rather than to say, oh, you're attacking big business, you're attacking the free market. I mean, they are attacking both those things because they think those things go together, but they don't necessarily. The regulatory obstacles that make it harder for newer, smaller firms to compete with older and more established ones and larger ones also have a negative effect on the labor market. They suppress the number of employment opportunities. If in a free market there'd be many more employment opportunities, that would put workers in a better position either to bargain for better conditions or to start their own companies, thanks to increased demand for labor on the one hand or thanks to the leveling of the playing field that laissez-faire would bring on the other. And that's one reason that in the 19th century, libertarians were much friendlier to the labor movement. Now, nowadays, libertarians like to point out when they're criticizing the labor movement, unions have often engaged in violence, either directly or indirectly, through the state, against employers, against non-union workers, and so forth. That's true. It's also true that employers have often engaged in violence against workers and against unions, either directly through, hired goons or through the state. But that's not an objection to businesses as such, that a lot of businesses have done that. So likewise, it shouldn't be an objection to unions as such, that unions have often done that. We live in a society where it's pervaded by state privilege and everyone wants to achieve their goals, wherever they are, by means of the state. I think the knee-jerk opposition to unions among libertarians often it tends to obscure the extent to which a lot of the goals of the labor movement actually would be more greatly facilitated in a free market. Now, it's true that a lot of unions nowadays are just basically labor cartels, government-privileged labor cartels. But what brought that about? In large part, it was a result of legislation that was supported by big business. If you look historically, big business said, if we have to deal with these unions, we'd rather have them sort of tamed and brought in as junior partners of the government-business partnership, so we'll give them certain rights in exchange for their agreeing, no sympathy strikes, no this and that, and so forth. You think of when the left talks about the achievements that unions won during the heyday of labor, when they talk about the weekend and the eight-hour day and so forth, well, those were largely achieved through non-government action, primarily by market means, and indeed over government resistance. And indeed, if you look at sort of the most interesting and notable victories of unions in recent times, they've been ones that were done outside the system of union legislation, by sort of non-privileged unions. Whereas ever since the mainstream unions got these government privileges, their membership and their influence has been steadily going down because they got bought off, they got sucked into the system. And, so when left-wingers complain, unions are in decline, we should say, maybe the government has something to do with that. When the unions accepted the devil's bargain of help from government with all the regulatory strings that went with it, basically turned them into labor cartels, which a lot of the time originally they weren't. Now, it's also important when we're communicating to left-wingers to pay attention to how what we say sounds to them. You know, for example, we often say, oh, we're against the conservatives. Conservatives are, you know, are interventionists. Well, here's how they hear that, because the left-wingers assume, they already come in with the assumption that conservatives are the less interventionist one. So when they hear us say that we think they're interventionists too, to them that sounds as though their reaction is going to be, oh, you libertarians are so extreme that even the conservatives, even these pro-free market conservatives are too interventionist for you. That's how they're going to hear it. So what we need to make clear to them is that it's not as though there's a continuum with with the liberals over here and the conservatives here, and then we're somehow just a notch libertarian word of the conservatives. But in fact, there isn't really that much difference in degree of intervention between the liberals and conservatives. It's often a difference of style. I mean, on the whole, liberals tend to favor more direct government intervention. Conservatives tend to favor more, indirect means of sort of empowering, giving special privileges to cronies. Although, of course, both factions do both. For example, looking back to the healthcare debate again, the whole individual mandate part of the Democratic healthcare program is clearly give away to big business. That's a corporatist side. It's probably one reason that the Republicans didn't attack it as much as they attacked the public option. I see I've written down here the public mandate. There's no such thing, but public option. I'm sure there is such a thing, but anyway, it's not the thing in question. So the point of statism isn't necessarily any less intense for being less direct. We should talk about what the conservative version of healthcare is, how it empowers insurance companies and HMOs and the MA. We should talk about how it drove the mutual aid for the poor out of business by legal means. And we're talking about when the conservatives are perceived as deregulators, what we have to explain is, oftentimes, they're stripping off some secondary regulation that was meant to serve as a limitation on some primary regulation. So, government gives some group a government-granted privilege and puts restrictions on how they use the privilege, then the Republicans come along and strip off that privilege. Who are we? Deregulation. And often there's a bad result. But, that's because that's not real deregulation. So it's important for us to overcome this idea that we're just like conservatives over only more so. Similarly on discrimination, we often say, there couldn't really be any much discrimination in a free market because a worker's wages are determined by their marginal revenue product. Well, in a free market, maybe so, but we don't have a free market. We have an artificially constrained market where the costs of discrimination are lowered. And also, when the companies are larger and more hierarchical, it's harder to tell what an individual worker's marginal product is. And as a result, pre-existing prejudices are more likely to guide that result. Likewise, when we talk about the environment, now some environmentalism is just sort of the aristocratic, idyllic, impose a certain idyllic vision on everyone. But a lot of left-wingers are concerned about the environment because they see resources being wasted and misused. And we need to point out the ways in which government enables that to happen, in which government, either by directly controlling resources itself or giving rights to these resources away to privileged companies, like allowing logging companies to log at sub-market rates in national forests accessed by tax-funded roads and so forth, is... Now, can this approach work? I think so. And those of us who are working in the sort of alliance of the libertarian left thing are often being told by liberals or leftists of various kinds, I could never stand libertarianism or take it seriously until I heard it presented the way you guys present it. So I think that that's evidence that that it is possible to win at least many left-wing types over by emphasizing these sides. So I think in some extent, we've been leaving one of our most powerful weapons in our arsenal, not using it, and I say we need to take it out and use it. Fight the power.